temperatures contributed nearly half of losses valued at $18.6 billion. While each of those relate to gross domestic product and productivity, none specifically refer to inflation and inflationary pressure, prices rising over time, and are not factored into official government statistics related by the Bureau of Labor's Consumer Price Index, the CPI, which measures the changing prices of a basket of goods and services. U.S. Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen and the Federal Reserve Chairman Jerome Powell have faced criticism for initially describing inflation as a transitory problem that would resolve itself. Janet Yellen has admitted that her initial evaluation of the economy was wrong and that she and Jerome Powell could have used a better term than transitory. She said that the bulk of inflation was related to imbalances in supply and demand. But that, too, has climate component, says David Supper, a professor of law and economics at Georgetown University, who argues that climate change is largely ignored as an inflationary driver, in part because it is manifesting as a global problem in overt and covert ways that makes the direct inflationary impact hard to assess. David Supper says its impact is broad and systemic, so there is no one item in the Consumer Price Index, the CPI, that you can say reflects climate change. We can say that grain and gas oil costs reflect the Ukraine war, but you can't do that with climate change because it affects so many things. Loss of timber and homes due to wildfires in the western United States might show up in housing construction costs, or the cost of retrofitting homes to guard against coastal erosion and flooding. David Supper points out, right there you have several things that are either increasing demand or undermining supply, and that's just one small part of it. Similarly, supply chain issues frequently cited as inflationary may not simply be issues around China COVID lockdowns affecting manufacturing, but a range of issues from roads washing out or loss of crops due to extreme weather events and shifting weather patterns. The Consumer Price Index, the CPI, is focused on results and not causes. The responsibility to assess causes rests with the White House Council of Economic Advisers, or National Economic Council, bodies that have attempted to come out with estimates that have been met with challenges to their data by climate deniers, resulting in paralysis. David Supper says that has led to less eagerness to do estimations in areas where a lot of estimates would have to be made because there's so little inclination to assume those estimates would be done in good faith. He added, in the face of a well-funded climate denier industry, the estimates get turned into a sideshow. Shifting the climate crisis from an environmental to an economic issue is at the heart of what climatonomics presents. Bob Keefe says what's required is an effort similar in scale to the shift from the industrial to the information age to renewable energy, and with it, provisions to counter climate change's increasing disruption. Bob Keefe says, what we do know is that the economic cost of climate change, both from weather disasters and commodities costs, is taking an increasing toll on economies. But if one of the major inflationary forces is climate, it's also one that can't be tackled simply by central bankers adjusting interest rates. According to David Supper, seeing climate change as an environmental issue, which it is, but not as an economic issue, which it surely is as well, is now in the process of changing. David Supper says, the current round of inflation has widened people's eyes to it. Sure, the pandemic and the war in Ukraine are part of it, but I think this is a teachable moment that will allow people to see just how pervasive climate change is in affecting the way we live. We have framed the climate concern in extremely narrow ways, never a good idea with a complex social phenomena or with something as all-encompassing as this.
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio.
IRIB English Radio presents Viewpoints.
Viewpoints.
With the presence of different scholars.
With the presence of different scholars. IRIB English Radio.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Assalamu alaikum to you, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio Call of Islam page. This is Viewpoints, an analysis on the thoughts and speeches of the leader of the Muslim Ummah, Imam Sayyid Ali Khamenei. I'm Atta, the host of this program. With me in the studio are two guest speakers from the Islamic House of Qom, Sayyid Naghwi and Sheikh Rouhani. Sayyid Naghwi, assalamu alaikum. Welcome to the show.
Alaikum assalam wa rahmatullah. Thanks for inviting.
You're welcome. And Sheikh Rouhani, assalamu alaikum.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
So for today's discussion, we want to talk about the status and the role of Imam Ali ibn Musa Reza alayhi salam, who's buried in the holy city of Mashhad. May Allah give us the chance of paying a visit to the city of Mashhad these days. Imam Reza alayhi salam had so much influence even on the court of, we can say, Ma'mun. We can say that so many people around Ma'mun and the Ma'mun, we can say, the power and the throne were influenced by the very character of Imam Reza alayhi salam on that time. So do you believe that Ma'mun was successful in controlling Imam Reza alayhi salam?
For sure, I say, like, up to some extent he was successful. But on the other hand, because Imam was a person who was famous amongst the Muslim community, not only Muslim but the others, and there were many things, we can say, like many blunders, which were done by Ma'mun himself. And one of the things was, as you mentioned, the dialogue between the Imam and the other scholars of the other religions or the school of thoughts, which Imam obviously answered the Jews according to their book, the Christians according to their book, the Bible. And there were other people from other religions as well. So this dialogue was basically organized by Ma'mun himself in order to show him downward, whereas when we talk about the infallible Imam, their knowledge is from Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala.
That's right.
They have ilmul ladunni, which we call, like, it's been given by Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. This family, the Ahlul Bayt, they're different from the ordinary people.
That's right.
So this was the mentality.
And this was the wrong, I think, understanding from the side of Ma'mun about Imam Reza alayhi salam.
For sure, because they never
it shows his intelligence and brilliance.
He was, but obviously because they do not have the ma'rifah, they don't know, because they are basically sink in the personal desires.
Okay.
So if they knew about the reality of Imam, they would never oppose Imam. The main issue is that.
Okay.
You know, even the Quraysh, they used to say, like, Prophet is just like us.
Yes.
Even today, we have some people like, for example, the Wahhabism or the Ahl al-Sawd, like, they claim that the Prophet is an ordinary man. There is no use of going to the grave of the Prophet, praying. So we have these ideologies in today's world, and even the same ideology was at that time.
That's right.
So basically, because he never realized the real personality and the status of Imam, that's why these things happen. But on the other hand, obviously, Imam became famous, popular because of his actions, his these kind of actions. On the other hand, you know, there was the famous story about the rain.
Yes, the rain prayer. Yes, the rain drought was unnerved.
So these things made Imam much more popular.
Yes.
And obviously the popularity of Imam, the Imam being the truth, haq, it was clearly shown, and it became apparent for the people. Mm. So when we look at this aspect, then we can say, like, even when Ma'mun brought Imam, it didn't, we can say, like, affected the responsibility and the activities of Imam the way it should be, like, when we look apparently about.
And did Ma'mun really feel danger from the side of Imam that he decided to martyr him, Shaykh?
It is really interesting to know that in Khurasan, in Marv, in those areas, at the time of Amir al-Mu'mineen, Ali alayhi salatu wasalam, a person called Shansab ibn Khurrank. So he came to Kufa from, let's say, that place in Khurasan, and he stayed in Kufa for a few weeks with the Imams, with Imam Hassan and Imam Hussein alayhi salatu wasalam. When he came back to Khurasan, he established Al Shansab. So it was a kind of Shiite government, or the first Shiite government in Khurasan.
Yes.
So it, from that time on, the Shia was spreaded a lot in this area.
Yes.
So that's why when Imam Al-Ali came to Khurasan, so these numberless people, when they followed and gathered Imam Al-Ali, of course, then Ma'mun was fearful not from the Imam himself, but for the followers, from the followers of the Imam Al-Ali, from the people of the Khurasan.
Yes.
So, and also it is said by some of the historians that it was because of the fear of Ma'mun from the people of Khurasan that he invited Imam Al-Ali to make them silent, to keep them silent. Mm-hmm. To tell them that, yeah, of course, I do accept the Alaviyuns and I do not have any problem with Ahlul Bayt alayhi salatu wasalam. You know that the Amawid regime was toppled down by the people of Khurasan.
Yes.
So they came from Khurasan by, what is that, the name of Abu Muslim Khurasani.
Abu Muslim Khurasani,
So these people helped the Abbasids to get the power. So, of course, Ma'mun was really fearful from these people. That, of course, if I do not give the true power to Imam Rida alayhi salatu wasalam, then the people are there. And these are the people of Khurasan who put an end to the governing of the Amawids.
Yes.
So they can do the same with us.
Yes.
So that's why, of course,
and besides Imam Ali alayhi salam, I think Imam Rida alayhi salam was the only Shiite infallible Imam who had role, or at least considered as a part of the government, isn't it?
After Imam is the second person. Imam Hassan. Imam Hassan had the rulership, but later he had to,
it was abrogated.
It was abrogated.
That's right.
And after then it's Imam Rida alayhi salam, yes.
The most serious time is that part. They say that there was a break for the Shia world at the time of Imam al-Baqir alayhi salam and Imam al-Sadiq alayhi salam in that period, something between, I think, is it between Umayyads and the Abbasids at the time Abbasids. Of Marwanids, isn't it?
Of course, yeah. And also among Abbasids themselves, there were problems, challenges.
Okay,
problems with themselves, yeah.
So
they were busy with themselves, so it gave a chance to the Imams to spread their teachings, to actually, to teach the people, to gather the people in Medina. That's the kind of chance that was given
to
the Imams, yeah.
And the people of Persia, nowadays Iran, were famous for following the Shiism and the Tashayyu, and they were the followers of the Ahlul Bayt. So with coming of an Imam in that time, which is, of course, a part of the, we can say, Abbasid Caliphate. It is not like geographical borders that we have today, Iraq and Iran at that time part of the same land of the Abbasid Caliphate. From one side, we have the golden age of the Abbasids, you know, this high boost of the sciences and, you know, encouragement of the scientists in order to go and discover new fields of studies. And from the other side, we have the presence of Imam Reza alayhi salam. And usually the people do not make comparisons between these two. How to value them? Sayyid, what's your take on that?
Well, obviously, when we look at the golden age that you're talking about, that was a time when, you know, scholars were honored.
Okay.
Obviously, they were much more free in communicating with the people frequently and on the other side as well. But when we look at the personality of Imam Rida alayhi salatu wasalam, obviously Imam Rida was on above of all. Because, you know, we had the dialogues, we had the way, like before Imam Rida, like Imam Sadiq alayhi salam, how he answered everyone.
Yes.
So I think why we call it a golden age is because that was much more peaceful, we can say, time for the Muslim Ummah after the Prophet, where, you know, the Muslim Ummah was in the battles all the time. We can see at the time of the first three caliphates, for example, there was an invasion of the Persia,
that's right,
Persian territory. After that, when Imam Ali alayhi salam got that khilafah, the apparent khilafah, obviously he was involved in three wars, and then the Banu Umayyah and Banu Abbas.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that was the Ma'mun al-Rashid's time, when, you know, the after killing the Amin.
Yes.
So he got relaxed.
The half-brother.
And, you know, the whole Ummah was in a state that there was no more mm-hmm. war amongst the Muslim Ummah. So that's why the scholars became, you know, apparent, like their role
okay.
was, we can say, like it became in front of people. And people from the thoughts and the worries that which they had for yes. the wars and the battles and the
yes.
problems that they had okay. between two governments, it was a kind of resolved. And that's why we see this golden age.
That's right.
And the peak of knowledge at that time.
And they have always referred to their relative familiar relations, because the Abbasids believed to be among the close cousins of the Ahlul Bayt mm-hmm. and the Hashemites, you know, and that made a reason in order to invite them. But at the same time, I say, as you said, the table was flipped, I think, mm-hmm. by Imam Reza alayhi salam on that time, and the story was changed. That's why Ma'mun decided to martyr Imam Reza alayhi salam.
There is an important aspect which we generally do not discuss
okay.
when we talk about the infallible imams, and that is that every single imam made grounds for the last imam.
Mm-hmm.
And we never talk about it.
Okay.
We generally talk about it when we
yes,
talk
yes.
about Imam Hasan Askari and Imam okay. Kadhim, for
yes,
example.
Yes, yes.
But when we look at the history, for example, the narrations that we have from Imam Sadiq alayhi salam about Imam Mahdi alayhi salam, because
mm-hmm.
we are living in this time now.
Yes.
When we talk about an infallible imam or the role of imam, we need to discuss about our time as well.
Okay.
What is our duty?
Yes.
And this is very important, that when we look at the narrations given by Imam Sadiq alayhi salatu wasalam, he talks about the Imam Mahdi, and he says, like, if I can come at that time when Imam Mahdi is there, I will be serving him
mm-hmm.
in the best way. After that, we can see, like, how he made educates, how he trained students. Later, at the time of even Imam Rida, when he was in the we can say, like, surveillance of Ma'mun Rashid,
yes.
even at that time, Imam had representatives
yes.
in different parts of the, we can say, like, Muslim territory.
Okay.
And they used to communicate, they used to come and go, collecting the homes or answering the people, their questions. So this thing was made. Why? Because there will be a time when the last imam will come. He will go to the occultation, and
that's
there is
right.
a need of this kind of, we can say, culture.
Okay.
And this culture was also made, and we can apparently see that in the life of Imam Rida. Why we say, like, Ma'mun Rashid couldn't have or he wasn't successful in controlling imam, one of the reasons is that because, you know, imam had other operations, the hidden operations,
yes.
which he was
okay.
doing through his representatives.
And we know that we had so many denominations inside Shiism, like Zaydis and Waqifis. But
yeah,
when it gets to Imam al-Reza alayhi salam, all of a sudden, the 12th Shia Imam comes to
yeah,
our mind, you know.
Yeah.
In fact, the missing link between the previous imams and the following imams is the very presence of Imam Reza alayhi salam. That's why he says that if somebody believes in me, he is believing the 12 imams as the Sahih Sharif. So really complementary role in the Shiite ideology, in the Ithna Ashari, we can say methodology.
One of the reasons is because other imams had two or three sons, or many sons. Yes. But Imam Radha had only one son. Mm-hmm. So you never see a person being eight imam, like believing in eight imam. We have people, Ismaili, who believe in six imam.
Yes.
We have people like Zaidi who believe in four imam.
Yes.
So you will never see like someone who believe in eight imam and that's it.
Okay.
Because he has to move on to Imam Taqi alayhi salam. And after that, to Imam Naqi. Why? Because brother of Imam Naqi, Musa Mubarqa, who's buried in Qom, he obviously, he passed away in the life of Imam. And after that, in the life of Imam Naqi, obviously we see the other things. So this chain continues. And that's why Imam Taqi is also known as Jawadul A'imma.
Yes. That's
you know, obviously this series, it never stops. So we have either sixth, those who believe in six or four. And if someone comes on the door of Imam Radha, then he has to believe in 12 imams.
That's right. Inshallah, may Allah give us the chance to go to the door and to the gates of the very holy shrine of Imam Reza alayhi salam, pray over there. And this is really a wish for so many Muslims and the Shias all across the world to have a travel to the city of Mashhad in Iran, in Khorasan. You know, Shah of Khorasan, they say, the king or is the ruler of Khorasan. May Allah give us the chance of go there and pay homage to the very holy presence and holy shrine of Imam Reza alayhi salam over there. Thank you, my Sayyid Mohsen Naqvi and Sheikh Rouhani, for your presence in the program Viewpoints, talking about the role and the status of Imam Reza alayhi salam in spreading Tashayyu in Iran or Persia. It was very kind of you. And thank you much, dear listeners, for listening to us. For more information, visit our website at parstoday.com/EN Call of Islam page. Also, you can visit our YouTube channel, Instagram page, Call of Islam Radio. To another episode, God bless you all. Fi amanallah.
The same when I'm too concerned by what they say. Why should I wanna have you to doubt you would be the worst to stay? Deep inside I know that amidst all the darkness and everything which makes no sense, I know that you exist. Guides me through my darkest nights, shows me right from wrong in a world that often lies. Cause I don't need anyone, anything in life but you. No, I don't need anyone to show me my way. No, I don't need anyone but you.
Food for thought.
Hello, dear friends, and let us ponder a short but sweet saying from Imam Ali ibn Musa al-Reza, peace be upon him. Refrain from using unlawfully obtained construction materials in your building, for these will ruin it. Thank you.
We are with you. What about you? Fruitful Moments with IRIB English Radio.
Cultural news, social news, scientific news, artistic news. With delight.
Five young and rare Bonelli's eagles born on a breeding farm in France are taking a journey to Spain, where they will be released into the wild. These eaglets were born in captivity, which is a rare feat for this endangered species. Three of the five are ready to be released and have been fitted with GPS microchips for tracking purposes. Their initial release date was delayed because of several weeks of bird flu, which made traveling impossible. The other two eagles are too young to be reintroduced and are still being hand-fed from behind the curtain. They will make the journey sometime in July. The breeders, however, are worried about how to sustain the program as their birds begin to age.
The Bonelli's eagle is a species that is relatively scarce. In France, we must have about 40 couples, something like that, who produce about 20 chicks per year. Here, we have five chicks, but my birds are very old. Still, five chicks is not nothing for a species which relies on a small reproduction number.
Pacto also says his five pairs of eagles are aged between 18 and 30 years, and three of them are now too old to breed. He says the number of Bonelli's eagles had dropped dramatically since the 1980s, mainly to electrocution on high-voltage lines. Due to the reintroduction program, the population of these eagles has nearly doubled over the past two decades. A Belgian company is trying to combat urban waste by transforming used coffee grounds into edible mushrooms that can also be used in construction. The mycelium is grown in a damp cellar in Brussels. Some 5 tons of coffee grounds are collected each month from partner cafes. They are then mixed in drums where the oyster mushroom spores are added and mixed with straw in a sack. The mushrooms emerge from slashes in the sacks 15 days afterwards and are ready to be sent to shops for sales. The business owners say they are looking to expand their business and use coffee and mushrooms as an environmentally friendly alternative to plastic.
Each day we throw away a lot of coffee, and this coffee to be produced needs a lot of energy from the cultivation to the transportation to Europe, and it's just a pity not to use it more than a few minutes to drink a coffee.
The company has already tested out its fungus-based insulating tiles and received its first order of these tiles for soundproofing purposes. Jacket says they hope to produce 12 tons of the mycelium material per month when they gather enough investment. The business owner says there is no shortage of raw material as coffee is widely consumed in Belgium. Jacket says the innovation can dramatically cut down on plastic waste.
China launches three astronauts to its Tiangong space station as its construction enters a critical phase. The three blasted off from a launch center in northwestern China. They are the second group of astronauts to head to the space station since its construction began in April 2021. They will stay there for 6 months. The space station is planned as a three-section structure. The core module was launched in April, and two more components will be sent into space in July and September. The new mission will oversee the integration of the three parts. The crew's commander has described the task as a pivotal battle in the construction of Tiangong, which is planned to be completed by the end of 2022.
Colombia's long hunt for a fabled Spanish ship, San Jose Galleon, that sank centuries ago, comes to an end. But the mission leads to two more nearby shipwrecks filled with treasures.
We have found two additional ships, one ship that is from the colonial period and another that, from the point of view of preliminary analysis, corresponds to the Republican period of our history. We also have related vessels, around a dozen similar boats, that will be located by our Navy.
The colonial-era vessels were found near Colombia's Caribbean port of Cartagena. A remotely operated vehicle reached 900 meters beneath to capture the shipwrecks and treasures inside them. San Jose Galleon sank in a deadly battle against English warships in 1708, taking with it billions in treasure. The Colombian president says the findings will be preserved and protected until extraction is done completely. The riches will then be displayed in museums.
Colombian scientists managed to reproduce an endangered species of frog, bringing it back from the brink of extinction. The scientists were able to reproduce 29 specimens of Lehman's poison frog after years of investigations and experiments using a lab built specifically for this species. They have released the frogs into the Colombian Pacific region with the hope of starting its repopulation.
We observe how the frogs adapt to this ecosystem, which is theirs, but it is a constant monitoring. And the idea is that of these first 29 frogs at the moment, there are really many more little frogs, and now we can tell the world that they are not in danger of extinction.
The scientists, however, warned that this particular species of frog is very difficult to reproduce or maintain under human care. They are also worried about the illegal trade of the frogs, which has already played a key role in pushing the rare species towards extinction. Colombia is home to over 700 frog species, more than any other country in the world except Brazil.
The Light is a bulletin in which we bring you a lot of interesting news in different fields like animals' life, cultural events, funny trending news, and more from every corner of the world.
Chinese scientists are establishing a meteorological monitoring station at an altitude of 8,800 meters on Mount Komolangma, the world's highest peak on the China-Nepal border. The 13 members of the research team started the trek towards an 8,300-meter base camp on Mount Komolangma from a 7,028-meter camp on Tuesday morning. They reached the camp in the afternoon and went on the last section of the arduous journey up on Wednesday morning. If the station is established successfully, it will replace the one at an altitude of 8,430 meters set up by the British and U.S. scientists on the mountains in 2019. It will be the world's highest of its kind, according to the Chinese Academy of Sciences.
A bridge too scary for many, but just the right place for those with a head for heights. Vietnam has opened the world's longest glass bottom bridge to the public.
The now recorded longest glass bottom cliffside pathway, and it's spectacular. The engineering required to build that into the side of a cliff but maintain all the features of nature, the greenery, the rock, has been an amazing project, very successful, and I think it will attract a lot of tourists.
the White Dragon Suspension Bridge fittingly opened with a dragon dance. The structure is longer than the previous record holder in China and has two sections. One stretches over 630 meters between two mountains, while the other runs around a cliffside. Visitors can look straight down at the valley 150 meters below. The structure is safe and made from three layers of 40-millimeter tempered glass. The contemporary ceramics exhibition kicks off at the Villa d'Atres Art Foundation near the French city of Avignon. The exhibit showcases nearly 130 artworks of all sizes. Some are so big they are put on display outdoors. The foundation has curated these modern forms from roughly 100 artists from all over the world. The exhibit displays an exceptional diversity of eclectic works presenting sophisticated skills and artistry. Participating artists say working with clay and playing with glazes always produces a unique item that often generates a profoundly universal reaction. The goal of the event is to show how ceramic art has returned to the forefront of the contemporary art scene.
A man in the city of Soran in Iraq's autonomous Kurdistan region has become a local celebrity for a rather peculiar feature on his face. Hussein Abdullah Ahmed is famous for a record-breaking length of his mustache. Ahmed has been going by the name Mr. Mustache for decades now. His mustache has reached a length of 2.4 meters, making him a well-known man in the city he hails from. His son says, however, that his father's unusual feature is nothing new for him.
I've always known my father likes this since I was born, although there were times when I had seen his mustache short. My dad is famous for his mustache, and we're proud of him.
Ahmed admits his mustache troubles him while working on the farm or trying to sleep, but to avoid the trouble, he either ties it from behind or stuffs it under his clothes. The 73-year-old man is not planning to get rid of his facial hair, which he hasn't trimmed since 1994. He seems to be enjoying the ride of fame as people stop him on the streets to take selfies with him.
The annual Vivid Life Festival has returned to Sydney after being cancelled 2 years in a row due to the coronavirus pandemic. The event kicked off with fireworks and lighting the sails of the Sydney Opera House. Iconic structures like the Sydney Harbour Bridge and the Museum of Contemporary Art Australia are part of a series of new canvases this time around. As an added treat, the 2022 festival also has the longest continuous light walk in the history of the event. Plus, this year's highlights include a choreographed light show by 600 drones. Both residents and tourists have been anticipating the return of the show.
I saw it about 8 years ago, I think, and it's just got better and better, as far as I can tell. I mean, the Opera House is the most amazing canvas possible to project, this just amazing digital artwork. The vibrancy of it, the colour of it, the animation of it, the explosiveness of it, the colour just bursts out in just amazing ways. That the snakes, the chameleons, the lizards crawling across it.
The Harbour City will glow with 50 light installations, the projection artworks, as well as over 100 musical events. Vivid Sydney is an annual festival that lasts for 23 nights, infusing art, innovation and technology while collaborating with boundary-pushing artists. In 2019, the festival attracted millions of attendees. The event is owned and managed by the Tourism and Major Events Agency of the Government of New South Wales.
Today's special.
Assalamu alaikum.
It's special for you we present to you today. Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim, in the name of Allah, the Most Compassionate, the Most Merciful. Dear friend, ladies and gentlemen, Salamu Alaikum, peace and salutations of Allah be upon all of you. This is today's special from IRIB English Radio from Iran. And today we're going to speak about extravagance in the view of Islam.
I pray to God, my heart, soul and body, every single day of my life, with every breath, I solemnly promise to try to live my life for you. Oh Allah, you did revive my soul and shone your light into my heart. So pleasing you is now my only goal. Oh, I love you so, I love you so.
Today, Monday, is the 13th of Zilqada, 1443 of the Islamic Lunar Hijri calendar, corresponding to the 23rd of Khordad, 1401 of the Islamic Solar Hijri calendar, and the 13th of June, 2022 of the Christian Gregorian calendar. Dear brothers and sisters, let's listen to verses 151 to 154 of chapter Shu'ara. From the Holy Quran.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم ولا تطيعوا أمر المسرفين.
And do not obey the order of the transgressors.
الذين يفسدون في الأرض ولا يصلحون.
Who cause corruption in the land and do not amend.
قالوا إنما أنت من المسحرين.
They said, you are only of those affected by magic.
ما أنت إلا بشر مثلنا فأت بآية إن كنت من الصادقين.
You are but a man like ourselves, so bring a sign if you should be of the truthful.
La ilaha illallah, la ilaha illallah.
Bless your day with contemplation on the verses of the Holy Quran.
Immoderation is a kind of corruption, and a spendthrift is a mischief monger and a corrupter. You must not expect any improvement from the painless persons who live in welfare, since improvement comes into being only under the light of Divine Prophet's school. So these couples of verses imply that the extravagant should not be obeyed, and those who are corruptors must not be expected improvement from.
Life is not the same when I'm too concerned by what they say. Why should I when I have you? To doubt you would be the worst mistake. Deep inside I know that amidst all the darkness and everything which makes no sense, I know that you exist. Guides me through my darkest nights, shows me right from wrong and right, a world that often lies. Cause I don't need anyone, anything in life but you. No, I don't need anyone to show me my way. No, I don't need anyone but you.
Extravagance in the view of Islam is the title of this episode of today's special. Muslim jurists have identified three factors that are used to identify actions that fall into the boundaries of waste. Firstly, permissibility in Sharia. If an act falls within the purview of permissible acts by Sharia, the forbidden acts exceed the limits irrespective of whether it is extravagant or not. Secondly, rational judgment, this is whereby some acts like destroying our property is condemned by the rational of people. In other words, it is considered to be a wasteful act. Thirdly, societal norms that shows the limits of normal expenditure from that which is excessive and wasteful. In order to show gratefulness and obedience to Allah, every individual, family, and society must avoid wasteful and materialistic acts by taking into consideration the three aforementioned factors that determine the wastefulness of an act.
Dr. Fakhr Rohani.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. In this episode, we are going to talk about extravagance. Now, we find that one of the important aspects in all human communities to be observed is that we have to avoid, everybody has to avoid extravagance, because not only it spoils our energy, it also harms our economic power. If people have, more economic power, and if they are able to manage, that kind of economic power or background in a proper way, certainly one of the outcomes of that kind of, economic management, proper economic management, is reaching very high aims and high goals. Please note carefully that some of the third world countries have many natural resources, such as mines and, for example, oil, gas, and so on. However, in these nations, we find that extravagance is unfortunately widely seen. In contrast, there are some countries, some nations, where, for example, oil isn't available or mines may not be available. Yet, since in those countries, they are committed to making the most of everything available, we find that they have improved quite a lot. And at the same time, according to, an economic interpretation of this discussion regarding extravagance is that, first of all, the income should be, allowable, and, allowable income, that is, not haram income or not questionable income, should be in a good proportion to proper use and proper consumption. From this discussion, one may find that one of the good ways and good yardsticks in order to be careful as to where allowable income may come is in a good proportion and in agreement with what the fourth infallible imam indicated in his masterpiece, Risalat al-Huquq, a treatise on rights. He indicated in Risalat al-Huquq, وَأَمَّا حَقُّ الْمَالِ فَإِنْ تَأْخُذُهُ إِلَّا مِنْ حِلِّهِ وَلَا تُنْفِقُهُ إِلَّا فِي حِلِّهِ. One of the rights of property is that you take it from its allowable sources and spend it in its allowable ways.
Special topics for a special program. You can listen today, now and here, IRIB English Radio. Today's special.
IRIB English Radio, and today's special, At this time, we'll look at harms of israf for the individual. Physical harm to the body exceeding the limits in eating and drinking bring great harm to the body. According to physicians today, overeating and drinking too much are one of the main causes of various illnesses and diseases. This is something which was emphasized by the Imams many centuries ago. The Quran also warns the believers against israf in eating and drinking. Eat and drink, but do not waste. Indeed, he does not like the wasteful. The wrath of God. God does not love those who do israf. Imam Sadiq has said the following in the regards to israf. Israf is subject to God's wrath. Let's learn a bit more about tips to avoid extravagance. Determine where you spend your money. After making a list of all expenditures, prioritize them. Immediately remove unnecessary routine purchases. Do not be shopaholic. Often people consider shopping as a source of fun and enjoyment. I think that statement would be heard by majority of us. Oh, I'm getting bored. Let's go shopping. And when we enter any shopping mall, we just go mad. We try to grab every single thing which tempts us and do not get out of shopping mall until our wallet is empty of money.
When we talk about, you know, wastage and israf, unfortunately, we take it very lightly. But we do not realize that, you know, when it reaches to a point where shaitan then exploits that, and we can get into worse situations as far as disobeying Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala is concerned. There are basically two types of wastage in the Quranic terminology. One is known as israf. Israf means overspending, being extravagant, and then there is something known as tabdhir, which is wastage, where you didn't use things and let it just, you know, go into the waste. Now, when we talk about, you know, this issue, there are different, you know, ways of understanding it. The most common would be the issue of food. When you talk about israf, israf here would be, for example, overeating. Now you will say, it's my property, you know, I bought it. But remember, health-wise, there are implications later on. Tabdhir means taking more than you can eat, where at the end you throw up, you throw that in the garbage.
That was all from today's special. And for this episode, we spoke about extravagance. Inshallah, we continue this topic on the next episode of today's special by IRIB English Radio. Till then, we leave you in Allah's protection. Fi aman Allah.
Crazy, who you praying for? They told me there is nothing, who you looking for? Stop doing what you're doing, 'cause there is no hope.
Just come with me, I'll show you what's behind your door. And they showed me all kind of lies. My eyes were locked, yes, I was mesmerized. But deep inside, I know that there's a better world. 'Cause I'm a believer. I'm a believer.
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program. Our website is www.parstoday.com/en.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.